Welcome to Ask Peggy About Your Finances, because prosperity is so much more than money. Brought to you by writer, speaker, and certified financial planner, Peggy Dowiak.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Hello, and welcome to the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. My name is Peggy Dowiak, and I'm a certified financial planner practitioner and a personal finance author. This is a show to help you understand your money, and I've got some great topics today. We're going to look about concerns about the accuracy of economic data and reasons why that might be happening. We're going to look at changes, again, to the accredited investor status and what it means about your ability to purchase certain investments. In the Plan Your Prosperity segment, I'm going to talk about portfolios and vegetable gardens. And then finally, in the Ask Peggy segment, I'm going to answer a question that people don't even know they should be asking, which is, what is the difference between investments and types of accounts? So let's get started with the Bulls and Bears Market and Economic Update. This is for the week ending June 6th, 2025, and it was a good week in the market again, with the Dow up about 1.17% and the S&P 500 up 1.5%. The NASDAQ was up 2.18% and gold was up a little over 0.5%. Oil, West Texas Intermediate Crude front month price was up 6.55%, and that is currently $64.77 for a barrel. The volatility index, which shows how worried people are about the market and the economy, was down 9.69%. The dollar was down 0.13%, and the 10-year Treasury yield was up 10.40%. That current rate is 4.512. The aggregate bond fund, as a result of that, dropped by 0.83%. And Bitcoin was up 1.72%. So there's a couple of things in here that I want to call your attention to. One is that the 10-year Treasury yield was up 10%. That's actually a big deal, even though the market was also up. It means that it's costing the government more money to entice people to purchase its debt. When the 10-year Treasury is up 10%, it means that the cost of our U.S. debt has gone up by 10%. And that's a little bit troubling. And it's usually a sign that things aren't completely good in an economy, especially when it happens when the Fed hasn't taken any sort of an action. So we're going to have to watch this. I'm thrilled the market is up. I'm always thrilled when the market is up. But it does seem like there may be something going on here that we want to watch, just to make sure there isn't something boiling around in the bond market that we're not seeing in the stock market yet, and that might be causing us an issue. Now, kind of related to this was an article that I read in MarketWatch talking about the concern of the accuracy of U.S. economic data. Now, the numbers I give you in the first section, they simply are the numbers. This isn't any sort of a study or research or gathering of data. That first section is just simply market numbers. So we know that they're accurate. But the kind of economic data that this article was talking about were things like unemployment, potentially inflation, CPI. And the reason that they're coming under some question is the market data the economic data that looks quite good is sort of in contrast to a general malaise of people being concerned. But that happens all the time. So don't let that be the last page that you read. The page that actually matters is the fact that these economic agencies are saying, because of cuts to the federal government, they don't have the manpower, they don't have the staff to gather the data as robustly as they did. So because there aren't as many people available to get the data and analyze the data, they're having to do more with less, which they are suggesting may also be part of why some of this data is coming out in ways that doesn't necessarily seem entirely accurate. Now, there's not a huge surprise here, although I guess when I was looking at the cuts in governmental spending, I wasn't thinking in terms of cutting the economists. I was watching other areas more closely, honestly, because of personal interest. But if there have, in fact, been cuts to the people who gather and analyze our economic data, it's just like the Weather Service saying they can't do as good of predictions because they don't have as many people to gather and analyze the data. So we may have a situation here. The problem is we base lots and lots of decisions around the economic data, and we have literally never had an issue with the economic data like this before. There were some issues in 2008 with credit rating agencies giving higher rates than they should have to certain kinds of loans. However, that was a private industry thing. I'm talking about actual government data. So this is somewhat unprecedented, more than mildly concerning, because since we're using this to make our decisions, it may in fact be that we're making decisions off of not necessarily inaccurate data, but incomplete data, where if all of the data was showing, we would come to different conclusions. So it's just something to be aware of. This was honestly the first time I had heard of this week. So I'm going to be looking for confirming stories. I'm going to be looking for additional information about this. Hopefully the data is correct. Hopefully things will settle out. There's a lot of economists who say that this uncertainty is going to begin to bleed out into our economy in some fairly significant ways, but we're just going to have to wait right now and watch, try to get good data, try to understand the limitations in the data, and go from there.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the legislative update of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And this week, I want to talk about some issues around accredited investors. Now, the accredited investor status is necessary to purchase certain kinds of investments, specifically things like private funds, things that look like hedge funds themselves. An accredited investor is someone who has the resources to be able to withstand a loss, supposedly because they have money. They're also more knowledgeable about investing. And then finally, they have experience and more background in investing that is supposed to let them know that they're taking risks. Now, the issue that regulators have had in the past is these assumptions are not necessarily correct. And sometimes the financial advisors, who may make a very nice profit out of selling these accredited investments, will go ahead and accredit people who really shouldn't be accredited investors at all. I have heard of advisors within my own scope of information who will put regular old people in accredited investor holdings only to have something go south, and then those normal folks are left with investments that they thought were okay because they really honestly didn't know any better, but they ended up being super problematic. The problem with assuming that someone with money understands the markets is it's equating apples and oranges. Right, you may have a lot of money because you're a surgeon or some kind of entrepreneur. That doesn't mean you know anything about the stock market. And you can have invested for 30 or 40 years, but done it in plain old stocks and bonds, mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, and not understand the details of a hedge fund any more than someone who's only invested a year or two. So there's lots of regulatory reasons why broadening this isn't the greatest of ideas, my opinion. However, that isn't what's happening right now. First of all, the regulators are broadening out the kinds of investment professionals who can make the determination of whether or not someone is accredited. So it used to be the advisors themselves had to have a fairly high level of knowledge, fairly robust credentials in order to call someone accredited. And the regulators are lowering those responsibilities. So what that means is an advisor with less experience may now be able to define you as an accredited investor. Additionally, certain kinds of funds are now available without having to disclose whether or not the investors need to be accredited, which means that the investors don't have to be accredited if absolutely nobody is asking. And there are some hedge funds who are really happy about this, you know, private investments, private companies who offer all kinds of investments. And, you know, here's the thing. Some of these investments may be really good. They may provide great levels of return. But I would make the argument that even with normal, plain old investments, most investors don't actually understand the risk that they're taking. I would further make the argument that a lot of investors don't really understand investing very well. And I'm going to talk more about that in section 4 of this show. And I think that that will hammer home the point that I'm trying to make right now. So it's going to be harder. There's more people who are going to be able to decide whether or not you too are an accredited investor. You know, last week I talked about the new regulations potentially allowing cryptocurrency to go inside of 401k plans. I would like to advise you, just like I have done on many other occasions, both on purchasing, you know, sophisticated investments that you have to be an accredited investor in order to purchase, and in putting cryptocurrency into your 401k. The same rules apply to both. Just because you can doesn't necessarily mean you should. So even if the law has changed, even if you have investment options today that you didn't have yesterday, I want you to go back to advice I've given many times. And that is, you have absolutely got to understand the investment before you put it into any kind of an account, whether that's a taxable account or an IRA or a company 401k plan. You really need to dig under the hood. You're not as interested in the potential return. I mean, we all get excited. Ooh, wow, that means it's going to make us a lot of money. You need to look at the risks. And you need to really get a detailed understanding of what kinds of risks exist. It's kind of like the stock market right now continuing to go up while the bond market is saying, wait a minute. It's possible, maybe not actually happening, but possible that the stock market is ignoring risks right now that the bond market is seeing. Remember, the bond market's always the boring part of the market. They're always the old fuddy-duddies who are the ones who keep saying, wait, 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 tap the brakes, while the stock market tends to be saying, go, go, go. When you don't understand risk, you get yourself into trouble. When you do understand risk, you have more of an understanding of how much of something you should own because you know what's going to happen if it goes down, right? When you don't understand the risk and all you're doing is being sold something, then you only see the bright side and the upside. And I'm not going to say that the people selling these investment holdings may not absolutely believe what they are saying. Okay, they may think they are the greatest thing since sliced bread, and maybe they are. This is a radio show. I have no idea what these investments actually are. I'm sure some of them are splendid. But you do need to remember that many of these products are paying the advisors to sell them. You need to be sure that you understand that the person recommending it may have an interest in your buying it. It never does any harm to ask the person trying to sell you something, "So, how much money is the company paying you to sell this product to me? What's your stake in this game?" It won't make you terribly popular, but right now it's becoming more and more of a buyer beware mentality, and there's nothing wrong with asking that question. And a financial professional who gets angry with you for asking that question deserves a second look as well, because when clients ask me something like that, I have no problem telling them how I get paid. And it's a reasonable question. And because I tell everybody to ask it, it'd be very unfair of me to get upset with it. However, you need to just be aware. You need to be careful. We need to go from here and see what's going to happen next.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 in Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Plan Your Prosperity segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I want to talk about how your vegetable garden is similar to your investment portfolio. Now, I need to start with full disclosure here. My vegetable garden isn't in yet, and it's already June 9th, and I don't know if I'm going to make it because it won't stop raining in Oklahoma. We have inches and inches and inches of rain, and we've had tornadoes hopscotching across the state. We've had hail. It's really been a nasty spring. But I'm hoping to be able to get some tomatoes and peppers in this week, because if I don't, I'm just going to be at the farmer's market all summer, and I'm going to give up in despair. I hope where you're living, things are going a little bit more calmly than where I am. I hope your vegetable garden is already in. If you have a garden, I suspect you have planted different kinds of vegetables. You've probably planted tomatoes, maybe you've planted squash, cucumbers, maybe you've planted lettuce if you live in a cool climate, maybe you've planted hot peppers if you live in a hot climate, but you plant different kinds of vegetables. You do this for two reasons. Number one, nobody wants an entire garden full of tomatoes because you just can't eat that many tomatoes. But number two is sometimes vegetable gardens are fickle. One year I got so many cucumbers that we ended up making pickles. I had to buy more jars. We gave the pickles away. Everybody who knew me got a jar of pickles, whether they wanted them or not, because I had so many cucumbers that there was nothing else to do with them. I've had other years that my cucumbers withered up and died and never gave me a single vegetable. So when you diversify the kinds of vegetables that you have, you help with that, right? If your cucumbers die, maybe your tomato plants do great. If your yellow squash dies, maybe the zucchini makes up for it. By diversifying, you keep a steady stream of vegetables. Well, you do the same thing in your investment portfolio, right? You're going to buy stocks, you're going to buy bonds, you're going to buy different kinds of things, so that if something is going down, hopefully something else is going up. We make that determination through correlation, which I'm only mentioning as a term here because this is a segment on investments and vegetables and we don't want it to get too hard. But the more lowly correlated things are, the more likely they are to respond differently, so that you're more likely to get something that does well. Now, even inside a certain kind of asset group, you can do some diversification. I like to plant jalapenos. I like to plant cayennes. They always do great in my garden. I like to plant poblano peppers. For those of you who are not from the Southwest, a poblano is much larger than a jalapeno, and even though it's spicy, it isn't blow your head off spicy. Very nice to cook with. They tend to grow really well here. So even though I have peppers, I have three different kinds of peppers. I never bother with bell peppers because I can't grow a bell pepper to save my life. So if you are looking at U.S. stocks, you can do the same kind of diversification. You can buy large cap, you can buy mid cap, you can buy small cap. You might even break it down further by sector so that you buy consumer discretionary if things are going well, or consumer, things like toilet paper and dog food that you have to buy whether or not the market is going up. So you have certain ways you can diversify. Obviously, you're hoping to be a little bit overweight in the things that are outperforming, but you can at least make sure that when you're in different kinds of investments, you are more likely to be able to make some money, even if things aren't going well. I'd like to remind you this also applies to the bond side of your portfolio, which nobody pays any attention to, but you can get like a blended bond fund. You can get a treasury bond fund. You can get a high grade corporate bond fund. You can get a high yield corporate bond fund that's going to pay you more money, but the company isn't as strong. So just remember that even inside of an asset class, diversification is your friend, just like planting different kinds of peppers. Now, sometimes I plant things from seed. And when I plant things from seed, I look every single day to see how they're doing. I do not, however, dig them up and plant another seed if I don't see something within 2 days. Sometimes investments need time. Now, I'm not telling you to buy and hold and forget it through anything. I'm not saying that. But what I am saying is you don't want to overreact. Sometimes you'll make a purchase and it was just a really lousy day. And so your first inclination is sell. Well, you should have done enough research before you made the purchase to know that it's either a broad enough index you want to give it time, or maybe you shouldn't have just bought it at all. You've got to do your research. But assuming you have, leave it alone for a while, okay? Not leave it alone forever, but don't be trading, because when you trade the portfolio a lot, you'll have a tendency to buy high and sell low. You'll get excited about something and then it doesn't do what you expected, so you sell it. Well, when it didn't do what you expected, it probably went down, right? So now you sold it for less than you've bought it from, and it's easy to do that cycle over and over, and it's the very easiest way to completely screw up your investment returns. Like I said, I'm not saying buy and hold through absolutely anything. I am saying do not overreact. Then finally, you want to make sure that nothing is in there nibbling away at your returns, like sometimes I get bugs nibbling away on my vegetables. This is why it's important that you work with a fiduciary with your money. A fiduciary is the legal standard that some financial advisors have, where they are required by law to put your interest ahead of their interest, which means they are required by law to sell you investments that they believe will do best, not just related to how much money they're going to make with the purchase. So watch all of that. I'm a big fan of the certified financial planner designation. If it's investments only, there are some firms where you might be able to work with a chartered financial analyst. Those are actually quite rare and fairly expensive, but the CFP designation, Certified Financial Planner, has a fiduciary mandate. So it's very important that you keep things from nibbling away at your returns that you're not even aware that it's happening. When you put all of those things together, you're more likely to have great investment outcomes. You can lose money. Anybody can lose money. Don't ever trust somebody who says that their investments aren't going to potentially lose money. But when you've done all of the diversification and leaving things a little bit alone and working with somebody you can trust, your possibility for success and a great harvest goes up.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
Welcome back to the Ask Peggy segment of the Ask Peggy About Your Finances show. And today I'm calling this segment Investments and Their Packages. I almost called it Red Solo Cup. And if you are a Toby Keith fan like I am, you know the song and you know that it involves having a Red Solo Cup at the party that you can fill up with anything you want. I miss Toby Keith, and I hope that he rests in peace, and my condolences go out to his family. But his Red Solo Cup, filled with many different kinds of things, is the perfect analogy for having a kind of account and filling it with different sorts of investments. So lots of times I will have a new client come in and they'll tell me about their investments. They'll say they have an IRA. And I ask them what it's invested in. And they say it's invested in an IRA. And the first time someone said it, I was very confused. What I've learned is people don't always distinguish between the investments and the wrappers. So imagine you have a Red Solo Cup sitting on your counter, and you can fill it with anything you want, right? Within a couple of limitations, but generally you can. You could put water or juice or soda, or in the song, probably beer, right? It's still a Red Solo Cup on the outside, but it's got different things on the inside. Your IRA is like a solo cup. Your 401k is like a solo cup, and a plain old investment after-tax account is like a solo cup. What you put in it does not, for the most part, matter what kind of cup you have. So you can have large cap investments in your solo cup. You can have small cap investments in your solo cup. You can have bonds. You can have mutual funds, ETFs, you name it. So you're not invested in an IRA. The IRA is the wrapper that holds everything else. So it's important that you understand that distinction. And knowing that you own an IRA does not necessarily mean that you understand what it's invested in. So that's incredibly important. And I have people all the time who don't understand what that means. I'm also going to apologize. I suspect you hear a little bit of background noise. Apparently they're drilling outside my house right now. So there you go. Anyhow, so when you're trying to decide what your investment portfolio consists of, it's more important that you look at the holdings in the statement than the kind of account that it is. So pay attention to all of that. I have some exciting news. I am going to be taping an audiobook of 52 Weeks to Fearless, What Creatives Need to Know About Money. And I'm going to be doing that at Luminous Sound Studios, owned by Trey Nigella, who's a four-time Grammy Award winner. He's a producer, a mixer, and an engineer. And he's worked on countless Grammy-winning projects with huge names in music. And I'm really lucky that he asked if I would like to tape my audiobook there. I'm thrilled to have to be in the studios. I'll report back when I get back from that. I'll probably tape next week's show right before I leave. Also, remember that on June 25th, my next Cozy, You Can't Bury Death, releases. Authors love pre-orders, and I hope you like the book. I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you to Sports Talk 1400 and Norman for production and studio assistance.
You may submit personal finance questions to the Ask Peggy Facebook page and learn more at PeggyDoviak.com. And remember, prosperity is so much more than money.